Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Hey, guys, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and I'm here to help you rock out with your talk out for the next however long it takes. Like, we don't put a time limit on it, right?
Correct, as usual, King Friday.
We just do our thing, man.
Yeah, sir, until it stops happening.
That's right. So it is a Ludini Rock and Roll Circus, and we're going to have a good time tonight. We're going to get the funk out and take it out, and I'm going to put it back in you and take it back out of you. Well, so in other words, we're going to give you the old in and out, talking about music and movies and genuine entertainment.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to have a good time today. We have a hot podcast. We are going to be talking about that time in 1986, 1987, when the band U2 discovered America.
Yes, they did.
And so this is an interesting story. So we're going to be getting into the album The Joshua Tree and having a little chitty chatty about that.
Chitty chatty bang bang.
Chitty chatty. We're going to tell you some stuff you didn't know about it. We're going to go through the songs, give you some backgrounds on the songs. So it's going to have a good time. It is still March, so it's still St. Paddy's
Month. Sure, so yeah, exactly.
Right? This album was actually released in March.
Shut up.
Right.
That's very
good. And they're Irish, St. Patrick's Day. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. You got a better idea, let me know, and I'll do a podcast on it.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I don't think we ever talked about this record, so we're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Pittsburgh sent me this. Is here today. What's up, Mr. Pittsburgh?
Hey, everybody. How are you?
You all right?
I'm doing good.
Thing that that I wanted to share is that this is great.
Yes.
Mr. Pittsburgh sent this to me this week.
Oh.
On TikTok.
On the TikTok.
I love that.
On the TikTok.
Did you see the guy talking about, like, all the reasons why the government should get rid of TikTok, should ban TikTok? And then every time he says a reason, he goes, oh, no, wait a minute, that was Facebook. And he says another reason, no, wait, that was Facebook. Funny as fuck.
That's a funny. That's making me giggle.
It's a funny.
Like,
so
a
this
little schoolgirl.
This is the story, right,
yeah,
of how Mr. Pittsburgh and Ludini met. Let me see if I can find it. This is really funny if I can find it. I didn't have it here.
Here it is.
A second to load. It's loading. My load is
load my pants.
What the f***, guy? You just made me drop my dunks.
Take it easy, boondock saint.
You know, the Chicago Marathon's not till October. What's with the tracksuit?
Yeah, where's your cute little skirt? You forget it at home?
Yeah, coming from a guy who looks like a Sopranos extra.
Yeah, I'd be miserable too if my dinner was potatoes and cabbage.
Shouldn't you be watching a Jersey Shore Marathon or something?
Smells like you brushed your teeth with Guinness this morning.
Irish Carbons, actually.
Oh, that's cultural appropriation. We're the ones who put bombs in cars.
I drink $9 cappuccinos and talk with your hands.
We got Christopher Columbus. Who do you got, Braveheart?
Braveheart was Scottish, dumbass. We got St. Patrick.
Oh, right. The patron saint of blacking out.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, he is. I'm going to be praying to him tonight next to my porcelain shrine.
When's the last time you were sober? 1998?
Let me ask you something. When you cut yourself, what comes out? Like ragu sauce?
Why don't you go find your four-leaf clover and Aaron go f*** yourself?
Aren't you late for your Olive Garden reservation?
Hey, can one of you guys help me change this light bulb?
What kind of stew not? Can't change a light bulb.
Yeah, you don't exactly got to be Einstein there, pal.
Wait a second. Are you Polish?
Yeah, how'd you know?
I can see the 18 consonants in your name.
I just need you two to spin the ladder while I hold the light bulb.
Is this pierogi serious?
You want to push?
Is this pierogi serious?
And that, from that day on, Lou and I were friends. Thanks to Michael Polanski. Thanks, Michael.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Anyway, so we're having a good time. LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com is the website. Check it out. You get all your Ludini needs met. And I know that those Ludini needs are deep.
Yes,
they're vast. So they're deep. Wide. They're in there. And we're going to reach in there. We're going to satisfy like no other podcast can satisfy you.
Hey, is that code for something?
Yes.
I knew it.
Yes. I saw a one of those window stickers.
Yes. What did it say?
It said minivan.
Right.
And then there was And then it was a, then it was a two hand signals, and the one hand signal was like with two fingers sticking up close together.
Yeah.
And then the other one was like was a fist, and it said minivan, two fingers in the front, five in the back.
Yeah. Wow. I get it.
That's
now.
Called the minivan.
Is that what so called the minivan?
You got to give her the minivan.
I didn't know that.
So see what you learned by joining the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. If you didn't, if you weren't, if you didn't come to this podcast, that you would not know.
You'd have no idea what's going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. You'd be lost.
Speaking of which, for those of you who,
it showed
up there. If it's not showing up on mine,
it's there. It's the, it's in there.
Yeah, we're looking at the comments here for
we see Mr.
Facebook
Pittsburgh's
Live.
Comments.
Yes.
So leave comments. Leave comments.
Yeah,
anyways,
but I'm not
so,
getting that, I'm not getting them. That's the thing.
So go to rockrageradio.com, download the free app. Now, a lot of you guys are already listening to us on Rock Rage. Tell your friends about it. It's a very cool thing. Free music program 24/7. Hey, and so Lily will be back next week. So we have some cool ideas coming up. Oh. There's certain things I don't like to do with just the two of us. I like to have her. So we have some.
I like to have her too.
Here
you know, to even us out. Even us.
Here we go.
To even us out. Come on.
You good? You got it all out of your system now? Okay, all right. That sounds good.
Did you like that?
I thought that was
great.
That's
what she said.
I thought that was one of the greatest things I ever saw.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into all that here with the Joshua Tree, you two. Going to go through the songs, give you a little bit of background.
Yes.
I'm going to get into that in a few minutes. What'd you get up to this week?
So I got three things to discuss with you. First one's kind of sad, so I'll get it out of the way.
Oh.
You and I have been to the Getaway Cafe in Brookline many times.
Yeah,
good place. I actually worked there for a while, and I worked under the executive chef, Chef Matt. Great guy. Really enjoyed working with him. Now, Billy Thomas, Billy T, our good friend of the show and of ourselves, texted me with some sad news. Chef Matt passed away last week. Yeah, and Chef, and he was young. He was younger than me. He was probably in his 40s. So that that was very sad. So, you know, Godspeed to you, Chef Matt. I hope that you're in a happier place. All right, so that's number one. Let's get the sad thing out of the way. Number two,
emotional damage.
Now I've forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, so you and I are both mature men, and I'm sure, like me, there are times...
Speak for yourself.
That's, well,
I resemble that remark.
You do resemble that remark. Every now and again, you'll say, oh, man, that makes me feel old. I feel old. I got that doubly today.
I never say that, but go ahead.
I'll say, I say for the both of us.
I'm kidding you, but...
But today I said that doubly, and here's why. My daughter, Megan...
Did you record it in doubly?
Yes. He means Dolby. But my daughter, who's going to be 30 this year. Let's take a second to think about that, Lou. My daughter's going to be 30. That's crazy talk. Anyway, she got tickets for her and her stepbrother to go see Avenged Sevenfold last night. Awesome. They get to the arena. The tickets won't scan off her phone. There's some sort of problem
there's
with them.
There's a glitch in the matrix.
She shows the receipt. She paid for them, blah, blah, blah. So Ticketmaster... They were up.
Ticket
they were
masturbator.
Up, they were up in like the nosebleed section. Ticketmaster Bader put them on the floor because of their troubles. I'm like, that's awesome.
Oh,
okay.
I thought they like took their
punched. They punched my daughter and put her on the floor.
I thought that they like threw their cell phones on the floor and smashed them. Okay.
No, but Ticketmaster did the right thing and they you know put them down on the floor. So she's seven rows from the stage. So. I talked to her today, and she goes, I'm wiped out. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, I went to the show last night, and, you know, three bands, you know, two opening bands and Avenged Sevenfold, and she didn't drink, you know, because she just wasn't in the mood to drink, but, like, she goes, Dad, it was so loud. Me and my stepbrother had to, like, leave the floor and go back into the auditorium a bit. I'm like, yeah, just add 20-some years to that. That's what I feel every day. But I thought that was funny. I'm like, my daughter is complaining about being old. One more.
The Avenged?
Avenged Sevenfold concert. Yeah, Avenged Sevenfold. I think so. These kids and their names and their bands. So the last thing is, I had some free time today. I was off today, and I went to your favorite place and my favorite place, Guitar Gallery. You know why, Lou?
No.
Because I've been saving my money.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Yeah, I've been saving my money. I ain't going to buy the Rickenbacker, but go ahead.
You are?
I'm thinking about it.
That's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah, I like the Tux. A lot of those, the only three colors I've seen for a really long time have been the fire glow burst, fire glow. Mm-hmm. The natural, and the dark, what they call jet glow, black, the blue.
Right.
Dark blue.
Yeah.
But that black, that like, black, is,
black
like
with
has
a white pickguard.
Yeah, it looks really like a tuxedo kind of color.
Sexy.
Yeah, neat. But go ahead, I'm sorry. I digress.
So I went down there, and I'm like, I'm just going to look, you know, and I walked in, and I'm like, well, you know, if I find a nice guitar, I can at least put a deposit on it and hold it. I walked through the whole store, and nothing grabbed me, which is weird for Guitar Gallery, because usually yes, they had some beautiful guitars there, but
yeah,
I don't
Murphy
have,
Labs and stuff.
Yeah, like, I don't have $3,200.
What, $3,200? You mean like $8,200?
Well, I was looking at the cheap ones. I was looking at the used ones.
Okay.
But, yeah, there was a couple there. And there was a used studio, and they wanted $12,000 for it. And I'm like, no. It was a Gibson. But I'm like, no.
Yeah, I know. I bought a studio for $600 in the 90s.
Remember that?
But that's long gone. However, used guitar. I'm sorry. Continue. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no. But, yeah. There was and even, like, Epiphones. Like, I've decided it's going
to
be an SG or an Explorer or some sort of PRS, my next guitar.
I have decided to buy a PRS.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. But, yeah, even like, they wanted over $1,000 for the, I think it was because it was Carina Wood, but they had an Explorer down there. Oh, thank you.
My Carina.
But, yeah, so today, adulting is hard sometimes, but I'm like, you know what? The car's up for inspection. Probably going to need front brakes. I should
yes!
hold.
I'm sorry.
Shut up. Yeah, guess who's inspecting the car? But anyway, so I'm like, all right, I'll just hold off. We'll see how the inspection goes, and then I'll find something used on Marketplace.
Well, there's a Philip McKnight who I love. If you guys,
oh yeah,
are guitar nerds, you should be following Phil McKnight on YouTube. But he's been saying for a while, and I think that he's right, that the used guitar market is very soft right now. There's a lot. It's not a good time to sell a guitar, but it is a good time to buy a guitar. Used one.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
I've sent you. Did you see that fucking deluxe I sent you yesterday?
I think so.
And I'm like, that guitar, I was like shocked at, like, the guy won $1,800 for it, and I was really thinking that should be like a $2,800 guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like,
is it a vintage deluxe?
You know, you tell me. I was a little confused by the listing.
We're looking it up.
No, that's
talk
that's,
amongst yourselves. No, that's, okay. All right, that's enough.
Yeah. Okay, so what does this mean? Does this mean it says Les Paul 70s deluxe, but this is 2021?
So it's like a reissue.
He doesn't say that in the listing. He infers that it's like original. And now it's been sold.
Okay.
But he had
that's
it
a
for
really
1860.
Good price.
Even that, yeah, a reissue of that, that's if it's 1860. That's sure. Killer price.
Man, the amount of Chibsons that are out there now. I really thought about getting one of those.
Dude. He's offering the guy that's the did the Greenie for me is offering the white custom.
Oh,
for like $280.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I'm like, I'm like, it would be stupid not to buy. I'm gonna get it.
Yeah, yeah. Zach Wilde.
Yeah, I prefer the white custom over the black custom for some reason. I don't know why. Maybe because of Randy Rhodes or something.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe
I had an 86.
Even though I don't play like Randy Rhodes or anything like that. It's
that's
just
exactly
like
what happens when you have a white custom. You play like Randy Rhodes.
Automatically. Yeah. I'll be as good as Randy if I get that.
But, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, that's what's going on with me. I adulted today and said, you know, instead of buying something, let me just hold off. I have more, you know, my job's really good so far, and I'm making some money, and I'm putting money aside. There's always the future, Lou. There's always the future.
The future's so bright, I got to wear shades.
And that's true.
Timbuk3.
Three. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. I I studied nuclear medicine.
Nuclear science.
I know. I used to put medicine in there.
I love my
classes. The song came out when I was in nuclear medicine
school. Got a crazy teacher who wears dark
glasses.
Oh, God. My Lord.
Hey, so what'd you get up to?
Okay, so I did all kind of shit.
All kind of shit.
So I this relates to your story. So I'm going to go a little out of order. This relates to your story a little bit.
Sure, sure, sure.
About... Well, it's going to relate to your story a bit. I saw Chris Shiflett called Shredding
Fighters.
With Shifty.
Yes.
I listened to his podcast this week, and he interviews the great Joe Bonamassa.
Oh, no way. I know what I'm listening to tonight.
Way. And
way, Ted.
So they talk about guitars. There's really some fun, super funny shit in it. First of all, Shifty wants him to teach him, Joe to teach him how to play the guitar solo to Blues Deluxe.
Okay.
And so Joe plays the lick, plays the opening lick. He said, well, here's the first lick, and he plays it. And Shifty's like, wait a minute, are you doing this with the, where are you putting the, and then Joe says, no, wait, let me do it again. He does it again, he plays it different. And he says, Joe, wait a minute. He says, are you bending this? And he goes, no, here, I'll play it slower. And he plays it fucking different. And every time he plays it,
nice.
He plays it fucking different. And he's not trying to dick Chris off at all. I just think like Joe just like, he's got a million licks in his head. And he's just like, he probably is very, it's the blues, dude. It's like, you know, it's loose. They're having a good time.
Exactly.
It's very, very cool.
Funny. Oh, Joe.
Joe runs his business differently than a lot of other rockers. Well, first of all, Joe was one of these guys like Ani DeFranco or Fugazi that like once he got kicked off his record label, he just did everything himself.
Yeah.
Just did everything himself.
Good for him.
So this started with Blues Deluxe. He did not have, when he put that, did that album, he put out a couple of records and it did, they were thinking he was going to be the next big Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Sure.
He recorded an album with the band Bloodline when he was like 15 years old. That's still some of my favorite Joe Bonamassa playing, by the way. He's fucking 15 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So they did a couple of records with him. Joe Bonamassa was one of these guys for maybe the first 8 years that, you know, he was doing records. I literally bought every album.
Yeah.
I have and after a while, you know, you start to get interested. I know what happened was I started streaming music and not buying it. And that's why I stopped buying his records.
Sorry, Joe.
But he was like one of my absolute favorite artists for you know, good 15 years. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In any case, but when that happened and he released Blues Deluxe, he talks about the recording of that album and everything, but they went to doing everything themselves. And he does what Shifty was referring to as the four wall approach or the four wall business model.
Okay.
Meaning that he's in control. He goes out, he doesn't like promote through like Ticketmaster or anything like that. They call up the Rex or the
Carnegie
place,
yeah,
whatever,
yeah,
and they say, we want to rent it. And they rent it themselves.
Uh-huh.
They do all the ticketing.
That's
themselves.
Awesome.
He says all these people in the industry will tell you, oh, you know, it's really hard, you don't know what you're doing, you have to la 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 la.
Phone call.
Says, yeah, and he says, no, it's not. He says he does have a big team. He's got about 20 people to work for.
Okay.
But he says, after you learn how to do the ad, you do the ads a few times, you learn what you're doing, he goes, you could do very, very well. And that's what they do. They do all their own advertising. He doesn't hire out. And he was like talking about, he says, ridiculous. He says, you know, I would go on tour, you know, we'd be trying to work something about catering, $2,500. He goes, it's some baked ziti, on a over a Bunsen burner in a pan, and some bottled water and some Diet Pepsi, and maybe a couple glasses, a couple bottles of wine. You know, that's maybe $500, like expensive.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Not $2,500. Yeah. So he's very business minded. And there's a funny story
really cool.
I know about Joe. The guy's a pianist stuff got a little dicked off at him because when he came to Pittsburgh one time, he needed a guitar stand.
Uh-huh.
And he went in there and he fucking haggled with them.
over a guitar stand.
Over a guitar stand. And they just thought he was a cheap motherfucker. And no, he's a businessman.
Yeah.
Like every dollar, yeah, he wants to know where it's going, and it better be spent,
yep,
on something that's like really meaningful.
That worth exactly, yeah, what's, yeah.
And because he says, my dad has a music store. I know how much that fucking you're paying for that music.
That's great.
And so and he talked about how, like, he says him and Shifty were talking about buying vintage guitars, and he, uh-huh, told Shifty, he says, be careful when you go out there, because he says you're going to have the 30% Foo Fighters tax.
Yes.
Because they know you're in the Foo Fighters.
That's why Shifty should hire me to go out.
Well, that's what Joe does.
Really?
He doesn't buy the guitars himself.
Yeah.
He sends somebody out. He's got people that scout around for him,
uh-huh,
and he sends them. He gives them the money. They don't know that they're selling it to
Joe
Bonamassa.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, he would get boned.
Smart, yeah.
He get fucking boned.
Hey, Joe Bonamassa, it's a $40,000 guitar.
I'm telling you, Joe does. I'm sure he does very well. I mean, he has Nerdville. He's got all that vintage gear, you,
yeah,
know, and everything. I'm sure he does very, very well for himself. But he's not making Madonna money,
right?
You know what I mean? You know, yep, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, he probably still has to work. He probably has to keep going.
Mm-hmm,
In any case, it's very cool.
Well, that's kind of
super
neat.
Fun.
Yeah, I'll listen to that.
Yeah, and they talk about, he whips out a Les Paul that somebody brought to the Royal Albert Hall.
Uh-huh.
He released a DVD of that. And at that concert, he met up with somebody who brought this Les Paul there that somebody had tried to do a conversion on,
uh-huh,
and so it needed a lot of tender love and care,
yes,
and so,
yes,
so Shifty asked him, cool, can we see it, and he got it out, and he shows it on the podcast. So it's very cool.
Oh,
if you're a guitar nerd, you'll love it.
I listened to it on Spotify. I gotta watch it now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, funny you mentioned that. When I was down in Guitar Gallery, they had an Epiphone Les Paul that was like, was it James Jared Nichols?
Okay, yeah,
with the thing, and I'm like, I thought about that.
That's one. A really nice, that thing, that's
I
really cool.
Thought
what
about
color
that.
Was it?
It was like a blue, like,
yeah,
a light blue.
That Pelham blue is blue? So nice.
Yeah,
yeah,
I
yeah.
About
it's
that.
It's like $250 more though than the black or the
that's
gold
just
color.
It. Yeah, yeah,
you know.
But that was
That's really sweet. Yeah, I'm waiting for those to somebody sell out used. I thought about buying one.
There you go.
Oh goodness,
guitar nerds. Yeah, glad Lily's not here. She would have shut us down.
So I just thought it was interesting. You were talking about Ticketmaster and all that.
Yeah.
The other thing
yeah.
is, there's a great Rick Beato talk out this week with a guy who works for Live Nation. And this guy was like not there as a representative of Live Nation.
Okay.
He was a friend of Rick's. They were roomies when Rick first moved to Atlanta.
Alrighty then.
You got to see what this guy looks like. I'm not going to play the video, but I want Mr. Pittsburgh to see what this guy looks like.
Is he real handsome?
I'm going to tell you, dude.
Is he
when
gorgeous?
I saw what this guy looked like, I nearly
sexy.
Had a fucking heart attack.
Sexy.
Nope. Watch. Look what the
okay.
guy looks like. Look at this guy. You tell me what this guy looks like. What does that guy look like?
Ah!
That's me.
Holy shit,
in
that
my
was
fucking,
just like you.
When I was about 40.
Oh my
that's,
God,
that's
hilarious.
That's exactly me. That is me. That's fucking scary,
wow,
dude.
Wow, man.
It's so weird.
You know, let's think about this. We could probably bump this guy off and he can slide right in there.
That's fucking crazy.
That
Anyways,
is so funny.
Yeah, so he was talking about a very interesting phenomenon in the music business right now. And I've been kind of talking about this too. Bands today
mm-hmm.
are bigger yet smaller than ever. Let me explain because this is going to go. I want to talk about Swift hate for a minute
aww.
Too. So this is a really good example. Okay, you know. So first of all, guys, stop hating on Taylor Swift.
Leave her
you're
alone.
You're not even listening to Taylor Swift. I could not name one Taylor Swift song.
I couldn't name one.
This is the biggest artist on the planet. When we were growing up,
mm-hmm.
If Taylor Swift would have been out in the 80s, we would know five or six of her songs immediately.
Exactly.
I knew a bunch of Madonna songs. I knew a
yep.
bunch of Cyndi Lauper songs.
Yep.
I knew a bunch of songs by like, you know, all kind of like sort of bubblegummy pop
sure.
type artists because they were inescapable. First right. of all, there was one music television, MTV, and that was it. there was just a handful of stations. There Correct. Was a, and what did you do when you when DVE was playing a commercial?
Commercial, you go to 3WS
or B94 or whatever. Yeah, so yeah. you fucking heard everything. You yes. knew everything. Yes. When Bruce Springsteen released Born in the USA,
right.
you did not need to become a Springsteen fan to know pretty much that entire album because mm-hmm. that's all that played all summer long. I went to New Jersey that summer. Oh my God.
Oh boy.
Oh my
Went
God!
Went to the promised land, did you?
It was just like you know, it was Springsteenville. It was crazy.
I bet.
Okay, so that's monoculture right there. That's when something is it becomes ubiquitous. You can't miss
sure,
it.
Sure, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Well, nowadays, because we don't have just you know a few couple of rock stations and MTV, you can pick and choose anything you want right. to hear. You don't ever have to hear anything you don't like to hear. This yeah. is the thing that gets yeah. me with the people yeah. that hate Taylor Swift. Like, you don't
even
like
listen to her.
You there's no reason to listen to Taylor Swift. Now, a couple reasons. Maybe if your kids are playing it.
Sure,
maybe,
you'll hear
maybe.
It.
Well, yes. you know, that's your kids. Shut up. Your parents hated your music, too.
Exactly.
You, they, don't be a dick. And or I did talk. I interacted with a guy on Facebook a month or two ago. He I was like, dude, like you're complaining about this. Like, you know, like you can just make if you figured it out, you yeah. make your own playlist, or you can, you know what I mean? Or the or if you're real lazy, the algorithms on
we'll
all the
it for
well,
you.
Just create it for yeah. you based on what you like. He says, I drive a party bus. And he's like, I don't have, like, I'm listening
I'm
to all, you know. So in that case, so, okay, so there's a handful of people in the country that sure. are, like, subject to some stuff that they don't really want to listen to.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I'm, you know, but for the most of us, most people
yeah.
do not have to hear anything they don't want to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, and I remember being a kid
mm-hmm.
and watching MTV at your house or Steve Guthrie's
sure.
house or whatever,
yeah.
and just sitting there waiting to see either the new U2 video
right.
or the new Van Halen video
sure.
or whatever, and having to listen to Denise Williams and having to listen to Madonna
uh-huh, uh-huh.
and having to listen to Shalimar
yeah.
and having to hear all these groups that I didn't really care for,
but,
you know what I mean? But I so just so I could hear the
new
whatever,
right.
okay, the music that I wanted to hear, okay.
Yeah.
So I was so you know that's more of a monoculture where we are. Remember, like you would go into work and be everybody be talking about what happened on Seinfeld last night.
Exactly.
Right. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
now like there's none of that because you're
no.
just picking in.
Oh, I don't stream that.
Yeah, I don't stream that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
They're good old days. Now get off my lawn.
I don't know if they were. I'm not saying they were good old days. I don't know. But
We made them work and we really enjoyed it.
But what this has allowed our artists to do is also get very, 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 very big within their niche. Like
mm-hmm.
country artists, like she started out, Taylor Swift started as a country artist.
Yes.
She went to Europe playing stadiums.
Yeah.
She didn't go over there and like start in clubs. She went there playing fucking stadiums, okay? She is a worldwide phenomenon. And there's a lot of artists like that who's, I'm telling you, people listen to this show, their names you would not know, and these guys are playing fucking stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in a very, very strange, a very interesting time. I'm not so sure that we don't live in a really awesome time. I was, you know, one of my comments on the video was like, there's so much amazing music. Like, it doesn't, like, I guess, you know, people are still crying about the Super Bowl.
I'm not.
There are going to be, our generation is passing away. All the people that we grew up listening to are passing away, or they're retiring, or they're getting out of it, or whatever. And there's going to be a new set of rock stars. It's going to be a different scene. We just got to, like, you got to chill
yeah.
out, dude. Also, if you like great music, then you can seek it out, and you can train the algorithm to show
yes,
you good new music.
Yes, you can.
You know, absolutely. We each have a band that we're going to feature a little bit later on
mm-hmm.
for you. So there's no reason to sit there and, like, complain. That's just a waste of fucking time.
Right.
There's so much great stuff out there. Stop hating Taylor Swift. I mean,
okay.
I got called, and then, of course, people are like, well, why do you love Taylor Swift? I'm like, I don't love Taylor
love
Swift.
Her.
Look.
Don't love her, don't
look,
hate her.
Look, exactly. I don't, it's like Swift derangement syndrome. You know, it's like with Trump. I don't, you know, I'm not a Trumper, but I don't sit there, oh, Trump! No, like, whatever, calm down. I don't have to pay attention to the guy. Simmer down. Taylor Swift, same thing. You don't have to fucking pay attention.
God bless. Brilliant. Brilliant marketist.
Marketist?
Is that a word? You know, like you said, not my music, but I got to give her an inch. Kicked ass last year.
I'm going to give her an inch. I'll give her an inch and a half.
Remember that day we got canceled? That was pretty funny.
Oh, goodness gracious. So we talked about the four-wall business model. Talked about Swift Tape. Talked about music monoculture and bigger yet smaller than ever.
Tell me more. I want to know more.
All right, Christopher Walken.
Pittsburgh Walken.
If
I can do Christopher Walken with a Pittsburgh accent, I'm going to work on that for next
Pittsburgh
week.
Pittsburgh Walken. Oh, God. So let's talk about, let's get into entertainment. Please. I just finished Mr. Lullaby by J.H. Markert.
You read a lot.
Boy, this book I'm so proud of you. Stephen King, like if he reads this book, somebody's going to get sued. This book is, it is Salem's Lot. It is Needful Things. It is The Stand. It is The Dark Tower. It's The Talisman. All wrapped up together. Yeah. It's entertaining. I was entertained by it. And I would tell you, you know, if you like the kind of thing, my sort of issue was if Stephen King would have written this story, the characters, first of all, it was about a 20-hour listen on Audible. If it was a Stephen King book, it'd probably been about a 30-hour. He would have gotten way deeper into the character development and stuff like that. And while some people find that tedious, it actually makes it much more heart-wrenching when bad stuff happens to these people. You're way more worried about them. And so there's a reason why he writes like that. Also, you know, in Stephen King books, like this book was shorter, but a lot of times on his longer novels, he'll spend a chapter or two, maybe three, talking about a character, focusing on a character.
Yes.
Then he'll spend a chapter or three talking about a completely different character in a different part of the country, maybe whatever, and developing that. And then, you know, and then as the book progresses, it goes from two or three chapters on each to like two chapters, then one chapter, and then by the end of the book, he builds tension by paragraph to paragraph. He's going from this scene to this place, and you're like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Like, it's so good. This guy does the same. He has the same type of approach.
Okay.
So this is, in many ways, it's so like Stephen King. Like, it's like, except, like I said, it just felt like, and I felt that there was no good denouement. You know what denouement is?
I don't know her. It's denouement.
Denouement.
Denouement. Oh, sure.
It's when it's like a return to normalcy. You know, when the characters go through their whole thing, and then there's like a kind of like return to normalcy, and everybody kind of settles down, and the people come along and pick up the pieces, and after the thing, and it just ends, and I don't know if he's hinting at a follow-up, because this just came out in 2023. If he's hinting at a follow-up story, I don't know. But anyways, that's my review of it. I had fun reading it, but the whole time I'm going like, this, it would matter if it was a Stephen King book. But it was entertaining. I was looking for like a good spooky story to be entertained by, and I enjoyed it. I saw a couple of movies.
Okay, do tell.
I watched Nosferatu from 1979.
Yeah.
The Werner Herzog, not the F.W. Murnau, but the Werner Herzog directed with Klaus Kinski.
Yeah.
Klaus!
Yeah! Are you ready to rock and roll, Transylvania?
Because
Klaus Mein. Klaus Mein used to say that.
Let's
talk about this movie.
Werner Herzog made some changes to the original. F.W. Murnau's, it's Count Orlok, but he turns it all back to the original Dracula story, the original story of Dracula. And so it's his is Count Dracula and everything. What is the cast is absolutely stunning. Klaus Kinski, Isabel Ajani is fantastic. Isabel Ajani plays Lucy Harker, and this is not the Lucy Harker that has been in like any other version of the Dracula story that I've ever seen. She is a strong, female character. She's one who's trying to like save Jonathan. She's after Count Dracula. She's like, she wants to get him.
Oh,
she's not like, she's not like, oh,
yeah,
you know,
the,
like
the damsel.
Yeah,
distress.
She's not a damsel in distress. I thought it was pretty good. It is wildly, completely fucking weird and bizarre and symbolic and like crazy. I mean, very influenced by German Impressionism.
1979? Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. You know, they don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't. Thank you, Greg King.
But I would recommend you check it out.
Check it
If you're into that sort of thing. You may not. Now, and finally, I want to talk about this because this is causing some controversy on social media.
Yes.
The New Roadhouse.
Sure.
Directed by Doug Liman.
Either or.
Starring Jake Gyllenhaal, or as I like to call him, Jack Gyllenhaal. This man is so ripped. Oh my god! He was making me horny. just absolutely, like, you know. And then I want to say something funny. Conor McGregor is in it. I misread the credits.
Okay.
And I saw McGregor, and I thought it was Ewan McGregor.
Oh.
And I was looking at this guy and going, like, wow, man, Ewan McGregor, he really bulked up for this. And, they gave him, like, some kind of facial prosthetics to change his look and stuff like that. No, it's Conor McGregor.
Okay.
Who's I believe one of those... mixed martial arts fighter kind of people, you know what I mean? He's not traditionally an actor, but I believe he's getting into acting.
Okay, then.
This is... Okay, listen. I just have to say this. Okay, if you... Do you have seen the original with Patrick Swayze?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Like, are you like... Do you own it? Are you like a super big fan of it?
I need to own it.
Okay.
I do not own it yet.
I think... Here's my feeling about the original was I thought it was a fun movie.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the Jeff Healey band was in it.
Exactly.
That was as a musician, and I was a fan of Jeff Healey. Like that, that really took it to another level for me. So it kind of made it a little bit. But it's a very silly movie. It's not, you know. And I was seen it maybe twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And what's his name? Is it Sam Elliott's in it? Sam Elliott's all fun.
Wow.
Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott. So what are you gonna do? It's fucking great. So, but I'm not like, oh my god, like my favorite movie, but it has a huge cult following.
Yes.
So if you're one of these people that like love the original, you're not gonna like
this. You're not gonna like this.
No,
kind of
Red Dawn, right? Yeah. I haven't seen, but I've seen the original.
The original's leave it alone.
Yeah. And some movies I think this is solid. I think that the remake of Roadhouse is totally solid.
Okay.
I think people that are like me that were just maybe casual fans of the original.
Sure.
I enjoyed it. I think that he has this great dry wit, the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of humor in it. And it's like a really good grounded drama for most of the movie. Kind of just a little bit of, there's a little bit of kind of like mystery as to kind of what's really going on with roadhouse place and everything.
Okay.
I think all the supporting characters and actors are pretty good. I think the weakest supporting actor is Conor McGregor because he's not really an actor. They got him in there because he's a fighter, but that's okay. The fighting scenes are fucking great. They're really, really good. There is, however, and I didn't even realize this until I watched the reviews from Film Threat and some people like that after I watched the movie.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, and I didn't even pick up on it, but there's a brief... The movie turns into Die Hard for about 10-15 minutes.
Okay.
It's not the, it isn't
the
whole
not the
thing,
full,
but there is a big action piece, big action set piece, as they say, in the third act, and... I think it went by pretty quick, and then people were complaining. People, the reviewers, were criticizing, saying, "Well, there are they use CGI in some places."
Okay.
I didn't even notice it until they said that.
Yeah. So it's good.
It's pretty good. Brief, dude. Like, there's an explosion, a couple things with some boats, and like. I didn't go like, oh my god, they ruined it with that
CGI's in there.
Like, I wasn't watching the movie thinking it was the fucking Godfather.
No.
I was watching it as a fun punch up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's guys punching each other. That's what it is. Oh, and to tell you, the one thing I got to really praise it for. Oh, yes. Like, it's a guy's movie. Men in this movie are fucking men. There's none of that. You know what I mean? There's no, like, women putting them in their places.
Stop all your bitching. Yeah, back in the kitchen.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a totally, like, you know, it's, you know, this is a guy. He's a guy. And I did see somebody talking about this online, saying that they saw it South by Southwest with an audience. They didn't release it in, it's not released in theaters. It's only on Prime.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's on streaming. It's on Prime. But he saw it in a theater, and he said it was a shame that they didn't get a theatrical release, because it could have been a really big movie. Because he says all the men were like cheering on the fighting, and all the women were like practically throwing their panties at the screen. Right. You know what I mean?
Yep,
like
yep.
It was like
it's got everything for the whole family.
This is what people like, guys. I know that we're trying to like do something different with all this, like, I don't know what you call it, you know, with, you know, having women act like men or whatever they're trying to do, but that's not what really, that doesn't do it for people. You know, something like this doesn't.
Even though this is traditional male role, female role, kind of works.
And the women in this aren't like mousy damsels in distress either. They're like, they got some shit, but they're doing some stuff.
They got some balls.
One woman owns the bar, and the other woman's a doctor. Like in the movie, his love interest is a surgeon.
Okay.
In the original.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know. You know, whatever. I recommend it. Look, if you can go in with the attitude that this is the fun movie, it's a punch
check your
up.
Brain,
you
know, enjoy
check, kind of check your brain at the door. Like it does get a little silly. It does get into that. But silly. Then again, like really in Die Hard, like this thing with him like catapulting off the top of the building and blowing out the glass.
Yeah,
the whole thing blows up.
No,
like
that's believable.
That is
believable, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So like,
might not be
able
to
if
do
you're
going to
criticize this small short section of Roadhouse.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You're kind of being disingenuous if you say you also like Die Hard.
Yes.
So, anyways, that's sort of like kind of what I got into this week.
Do we have any comments on? I cannot see comments for whatever reason on my thing. Oh, see,
my dad had an Alice Cooper album.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill Damiano's saying all kind of stuff.
Bill, you're the best. Oh, sorry, I can't see your comments on my phone, Bill. So,
Kevin or Lou, say you're tuned in to Build the Scene. Got to get. I did that. I did it last week. Where were you?
I think I already have.
Whose butt did you have to see? Jake Gyllenhaal's. You did see his butt a couple of times.
Oh, sexy.
The way
I'd rather see Maggie Gyllenhaal's butt. I actually have. So, well, not in real life, not in person.
You know, it's funny. Like that's the. Connor. Yeah, you do see his butt a lot.
I don't want to see Connor's butt either.
It's funny because like I'm watching that and I'm like, this is the same guy that played Donnie Darko.
Yeah,
it's a very different role, and like he played like his role in Zodiac is very different too. He's like kind of this like obsessed, nerdy, you know, neurotic kind of guy. Like he's great in this. He's like very cool, very like there's a great scene at the beginning of the movie where like these guys are giving him shit, and he's like I just want to make sure. That you all have your health insurance paid up,
right?
And the next scene is they're all beat the fucking back, and he's driving them to the hospital.
Nice.
So there's like a lot of humor in it.
Jody.
Oh, Jody says Swayze's butt was seen in the original. Did you hear that, Bill?
Yeah.
So
it sure was.
She put you in your place.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to see Miss J there.
Hello, Miss J.
Yes, I am free this weekend. You were asking me, and I did not get a chance to respond. It's been a crazy day. You don't know the half of it.
Well, yeah, I'm $20 this weekend, so Lou's probably the better choice.
Oh, my God. So, anyways, so let's go ahead and talk about you two. You two.
Me too.
You
us,
two.
Us two. You two.
You two. You two.
All right.
You too? Guys, Mr. Pittsburgh. Before we did this last time when we talked about albums.
Yeah,
albums. Do you remember when you first heard this album?
When did it come out?
1987.
All right, so I was still in the Army. So I didn't really buy a lot of albums in the Army. I just remember hearing a lot of airplay of the songs on the album and going, that's you too.
Excuse me
very much. Thank you very much.
I had the Unforgettable Fire.
Okay.
On cassette.
Yes.
And I went to that tour. I saw that tour at the Civic Arena. They had abandoned their kind of sound that they had on Boy, October, and War.
Uh-huh.
They went for a more kind of ethereal, dreamy, like the only thing that really resembled their previous albums was the song Pride in the Name of Love. The rest of the songs on The Unforgettable Fire are way more like, you know, I don't know how you express, like I said, more ethereal kind of sounding stuff. And it was a big record for them. Pride in the Name of Love was a kind of their breakout song. It got them, you know, a lot of airplay. I don't know if it was a number one hit, but it was a top 40 hit for them.
Right.
Up to that point, they were kind of like an album band.
Yeah.
So one of the things that people don't understand about U2 is maybe not realize about U2 is like when they got together, one of the things that they said was they did not want to do anything that sounded like traditional rock music.
Right.
They kind of said, and this Bono said this, he said, we said fuck off to the blues. We weren't going to play the blues. We just felt that was so tired and so like done to death. And we weren't going to do it. We're just like, we're done. You know, we're not, we do our own thing. And they had a good career for four albums with that attitude. They really did. They, you know, what they were doing was very different. It didn't sound like anything else. But it was totally rock and roll. Is that the great thing about rock? Right. So much stuff can fit into the rock thing. And then they got asked to participate.
Oh.
In the project called Sun City with Steven Van Zandt. Remember, guys, there was a thing in for all the hate my country gets for racism and segregation and stuff.
Sure.
In the mid 1980s, which is pretty soon, like the America didn't have slaves by the 1870s, 1880s. That was over. In the 1980s,
right.
South Africa basically had a very terrible kind of slavish kind of situation going on, a segregation thing going on. It was just absolutely, you know, just really like very cringy. Right. We had done that. We had the Jim Crow in the 60s. This was even worse than that. Yeah, it was called apartheid. And some people in America have been. For a long time had seen what was going on and were trying to tell people about it.
Exactly.
And you know how I heard about apartheid? It was not from this. I'm going to tell you how I heard. You're not going to believe it. Uh-huh. I heard about apartheid from Christian music, from the song Africans by Rez Band, which is a song about an anti-apartheid song.
Yeah.
And I remember they doing that song and I being very young and going like, what is he talking about? Yeah. And I found out about it. I'm like, ew, that's really ugly. Like even as a kid, I knew that was like, yuck. So anyways, Steven Van Zandt put together one of these like albums to kind of raise awareness and money to help these people in South Africa. And it was called Sun City, and there was a lot of rappers participated on it. Keith Richards and Mick Jagger were on it, and he invited U2 to play. And Bob Dylan participated in Van Morrison.
I remember that.
And U2 got there, and Bono was like, me and Edge were like, we felt like we didn't have anything to contribute. We felt like we had nothing to say because we aren't. We said fuck off to the blues. Like, we were like completely out.
Here's
of
these rockers based on blues.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were all doing that. So it really kind of made him go like, I think maybe we need to rethink this, you know, American music thing.
Right.
That and touring America on the Unforgettable Fire tour. They did things like visit Graceland.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
The Americana thing.
Yeah. And they started to get the kind of like settle into the sort of American experience. Mm-hmm, he felt that America was two Americas. And this is something that, again, this is the European and sort of British perspective on America that, like, you know, and I've heard this so many times. I went to Europe in 2001, and like everybody over there had like American rock band stuff on their T-shirts and American movies and American culture, this and that. But all they wanted to do was talk about how they hated our politics. Like, you know, that's all. And they tried to drag you into political arguments over and over. And I was like, oh, fuck off. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't know what's going on. You know, I don't give a fuck.
Let's talk about your T-shirt.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You know, let's talk about the new, you know, whatever, movie or album, whatever. So he was, you know, sort of like, and so the album was originally going to be called, as they started putting the songs together and getting the sound together for it, and they were considering the title The Two Americas.
Oh, interesting.
So it's the fifth studio album by U2. It's produced by Daniel Lenoir.
Yeah, sure.
Lanois. Lenoir. Sure.
We know the next
Lenoir.
One.
Lenoir. Benoit. Benoit and his
Benoit
balls.
Benoit and his balls.
And Brian Eno, and was released on March 9th of 1987 on Island Records. In contrast to the ambient experimentation with The Unforgettable Fire, the band aimed for a harder-hitting sound within the limitation of the conventional song structures on the Joshua Tree. The album is influenced by American and Irish roots music, though sociopolitically conscious lyrics embellished with spiritual imagery, which U2 has always had the whole spiritual imagery thing going on.
Yes.
It contrasts the group's antipathy for the real America with their fascination with the mythical America. So in other words, again, they didn't like our politics, but they loved the sort of idea of America. Cowboys and, you know, Elvis and all that stuff. Inspired by American experiences, literature, politics, U2 chose America as a theme for the album. Recording began in January 1986 in Ireland.
Aye.
And to foster a relaxed, creative atmosphere, the group primarily recorded in two houses. Several events during the sessions helped shape the conscious tone of the album, including the band's participation in the Conspiracy of Hope benefit, concerts for Amnesty International, and the death of roadie Greg Carroll and lead vocalist Bono's travels to Central America. Recording was completed in 1986. Additional production continued into 1987. Throughout the sessions, U2 sought a cinematic quality for the record, which I absolutely think that they achieved. One that would evoke a sense of location, in particular, the open spaces of the United States. They represented this in the sleeve photography depicting the American desert landscapes. The Joshua Tree received critical acclaim, topped the charts in over 20 countries, and became the fastest-selling album in British history. According to Rolling Stone, the album increased the band's stature from heroes to superstars. It produced hit singles, With or Without You, I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, and Where the Streets Have No Name, the first two of which became the group's only number one singles in the U.S. The album won Grammy Awards for Album of the Year and Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group with a Vocal in 1988. The group supported the record with the Joshua Tree Tour throughout 1987, during which they began to perform in stadiums for the first time in their career. Frequently listed among the greatest albums of all time, The Joshua Tree is one of the world's best-selling albums with over 25 million copies sold. U2 commemorated the record's 20th anniversary with a remastered re-release and its 30th anniversary with concert tours and a reissue. In 2014, The Joshua Tree was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame and was selected for preservation in the U.S. National Recording Registry for being deemed culturally historically actually aesthetically significant by the Library of Congress.
There you go.
And they're not even American.
Not bad for a couple of mix. All right.
Oh, my goodness. So we can, I mean, there's a long there's a thing that led up to this, including... Including, like I said, their work on Sun City, their work with Live Aid, and things like that. Let's talk about the songs.
Let's do that.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
No, not sex. Not what I'm talking about.
Oh, goodness, I have to poop. No, I
don't. Whoa!
That's a lie.
Sir, this is a family show, God damn it. Knock that shit off, you fucker.
So we open the album with a song called... Where the Streets Have No Name.
Yes, yes.
And I think that where that would be a very confusing place, quite frankly. You know, how
well, do you know the origins? You're going to talk about it? All right. Because I know. What I'm trying to say. So you're going to go down to, and then you make a left on.
Exactly. How are you going to know where you're going?
Yeah, I know.
It's crazy. But go ahead, Mr. Pittsburgh.
So the origins of that is... Ireland is kind of divided between two religions, Protestants and Catholics. And, I mean, when I say divided, I mean divided, okay? And you can actually tell a person's religion by which street they lived on. And so what Bono was saying is, you know, I'm going to go to a place where there are no names on the streets. So you don't, you just look at the person as a person. And that's where that came from, which I thought was really interesting. I'm like, well, ain't that some shit? That's what I said.
Some people thought that the song had to do with Ethiopia because he visited Ethiopia after Live Aid. But, as Mr. Pittsburgh is
wrong,
explained it, is not what came up with.
There's no names on the streets in Ethiopia either. You know why? Because there's no roads. There's no streets. I don't know. There might be. I'm being, you know, Atlas-tis.
On reflection, I suppose I want to write about that other country, the country of the imagination. I want to run out of hiding. I want to tear down the walls that hold me inside myself. I want to touch the flame. Brian Eno, known for his ethereal experimental music and for his time in Roxy Music, produced the track along with Daniel Lanois. Eno got a chance to build one of his signature soundscapes on the intro. Edge wrote the music in his home studio with no idea what the lyric would get attached to. His demo had a keyboard line at the beginning that Eno worked into a slow building opening driven by his synthesizer. Edge added one of his distinctive guitar parts, a repeated arpeggio with a delay effect. That's the thing, and he plays this on. He demonstrates this in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He talks about how, like, so many of his riffs are work because of the... If you turn the delay off, it just sounds like he's playing...
Yeah, it's just like, ding, 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 ding. No, you add the delay.
When you add that to it, it adds this really neat rhythmic, repeating thing. The band claims they were offered $23 million to use a song in a car commercial. They considered it. Reasoning they could give some of the money to charity to make them feel better about it, but decided against it. They didn't want people thinking of it as that song from that car ad.
Exactly. Good.
The song was extremely difficult to produce. The arrangement was written on a blackboard because it was so complex. Producer Brian Eno estimated the recording of the song absorbed 40% of the time spent on the Joshua Tree. Wow.
Jeez.
Eno became so frustrated by trying to mix the track that he almost destroyed the tape and started over. According to co-producer Daniel Lanois, the assistants never followed Eno's frustrated instructions to wipe the tape. Wow. So he even told the assistants, get rid of this.
They're like, nah, okay, we'll take care of it. Put it over here.
It was a bit of a tongue twister for the rhythm section with the strange bar lengths that got everybody in a bad mood. I can remember pointing at the blackboard, walking everybody through the changes like a science teacher.
That's very Rush-esque, isn't it?
There's a part of Eno that likes instant gratification. He'd rather throw something difficult away and start something new.
Wow.
Video. We should talk about videos because they did become... These guys became a big MTV band. I mean, they were... that this was the height of MTV and they were sucking it all up. The video shows you two putting on an impromptu concert on the roof of the Republic Liquor Store at the corner of 7th and Main Street in Los Angeles, where the streets do have names. This was an innovative way to shoot a video, leading to some surprised looks as some onlookers were delighted, while others were upset because they were stopping traffic. The concert video shoot took place on March 27th, 1987. U2 played the song four times and also played People Get Ready, In God's Country, Sunday Bloody Sunday, and Pride in the Name of Love. Mm. It won the Grammy for Best Performance Music Video in 1989. Yeah. The concept was similar to the Beatles' famous Apple Records rooftop concert. It was very, well, I remember seeing it going, oh,
yeah,
they're doing
very
the Beatles
Let
thing.
It Be kind of,
When asked about the similarity, rooftop concert, the Beatles rooftop concert, Bono said, we ripped off the Beatles many times before.
He's honest.
Everybody's ripping off the Beatles. At least Bono said, you know, as much as he runs his mouth these days, he was right about that.
Exactly. Oh, man.
He said in 1987 in the magazine Propaganda 5, Where the Streets Have No Name is more like the U2 of old than any of the other songs on the LP because it's a sketch. I was just trying to sketch a location, maybe a spiritual location, maybe a romantic location. I was trying to sketch a feeling. I often feel very claustrophobic in a city, a feeling of wanting to break out of that city and feeling of wanting to go somewhere where the values of the city and the values of our society don't hold you down.
Mm.
The single also included Sweetest Thing, which became a hit when it was re-released in 19. So maybe, I guess that's the reference to the B-side?
Maybe. Oh, yeah,
that's not
on
the album, but it was recorded during these, I believe, this session. But it didn't. It became a hit, though, many years later.
Okay.
Pet Shop Boys did a mashup of this song with the Frankie Valli hit Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. I would have to go back and revisit that. I've never seen or heard that. Yeah. U2 performed this at the halftime show in 2002. Patriots versus the Rams.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bono said that producer Brian Eno reassured him about the unfinished lyrics. Brian said, incomplete thoughts are generous because they allow the listener to finish.
Oh, okay,
them.
Sure.
Oh, okay, so there's a million things about this thing. Steve Lillywhite, who produced U2's first three albums, was brought in to do the final mix on this.
Okay.
Steve Lillywhite was such a huge part of their early sound. And this record does kind of bring back their more edgier kind of sound that they had before like I said, the Unforgettable Fire is way more mellow, more of kind of ethereal, dreamy kind of feel to it. Where the Streets Have the Name. We follow that with, I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
It's over here.
Oh, God. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Why don't you tell Bono? Because he still hasn't found it.
Poor Bono.
Lyrics could refer to a search for spiritual enlightenment or a search for love. In an interview with Rolling Stone magazine, Bono said the song was an anthem of doubt more than faith. The Edge came up with the title and melody, and Bono wrote the lyric around it. This was influenced by gospel music. Mm-hmm. Bono wanted the Joshua Tree to explore various forms of American music that they encountered while touring there. The album's co-producer, Daniel Lanois, said he nudged Bono in the gospel direction on tracks like this one.
Mm-hmm.
He explained in the TV documentary Classic Albums, U2 The Joshua Tree, I've always liked gospel music, and I encouraged Bono to take it to that place. It was very non-U2 thing to do at the time, to go to the street of gospel. I think it opened the door for them to experiment in that with that territory. He's singing at the top of his range, and there was something very compelling about somebody pushing themselves. It's like hearing Aretha Franklin almost. It jumps on you, and you can't help but feel the feeling.
Yes.
Bono has written a variety of spiritual songs. This one makes a distinct reference to Jesus. I believe in the kingdom come. You broke the bonds. You lose the chains. He's acknowledging salvation, yet still hasn't found what he's looking for.
Interesting.
This need for deeper fulfillment and futile search corresponds to a setback in the cycle of faith. The setback of inferiority is followed by confusion. Rather than getting back onto the path towards better faith, another setback occurs. The frustration of the first setback grows, causing confusion and distorted perspective. The Edge says, we were listening to some gospel during the Joshua Tree sessions. I remember the Mighty Clouds.
Okay.
I believe he's talking about the Mighty Clouds of Joy. I believe that's who he's referring to. And the Reverend Cleveland and the Staple Singers. Mm. The original was more loose, almost Jamaican. Bono hit on the melody, and I had the title in a notebook. At first, no one took it that seriously because it sounded unlike anything we'd ever done. And it didn't gel until the mix. When it was finished, we realized that we had something special.
Special?
Special. Reviewers didn't like it, though. One American said it was a pale imitation of the original form of the Foreigner song, I Want to Know What Love Is. Wow. Wow.
That's what I said.
Bono sometimes introduced this as a kind of gospel song with a restless spirit. And then, of course, it was re-recorded and a hit all over again on the follow-up album, Rattle and Hum, where they actually brought a gospel choir
to
sing on it. And it became a hit all over again.
Yeah.
That is, I still haven't found
what I'm looking for.
And this song right here was another massively big.
Here's the thing about this song that we're going to talk about.
It's... with or without you. Go ahead.
Yes. If you're in a band, you need to get the tempo right. Because if it's too fast, it loses something. If it's too slow, it takes 17 years to finish. The one night we played this, and I'm like, that took forever. And the guitarist is like, look, the drummer's like, you're playing it way too slow.
With or without you.
Yeah, I'm like, let's not do that song anymore if we can't do it right. grazie for the.
I remember this being this. This is for some reason this pops out of my head. Is the first song that I heard on the album. I think.
Oh, really?
Maybe. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Just
you might be right.
In 1987, Bono explained that everybody in the group knows what the line "you give yourself away" means. It's about how I feel in U2 at times, exposed. I'm not going to too many interviews this year because there's a cost to my personal life and a cost to the group as well.
Yep.
In 05, Bono called the refrain most important part of the song because it signifies a release of mental tension, which is when the aha comes out. That is what giving yourself away is musically.
All right.
The lyric can be interpreted in as many ways. Bono explained that he wanted to write a love song that dealt with real issues. This is U2's breakout hit in America, where they had only modest success until the Joshua Tree album. They had long been stars in their native Ireland with their previous album, The Unforgettable Fire. They broke through in the UK. But with Until, With or Without You, their biggest U.S. hit single was Pride in the Name of Love that went to 33.
Yep.
When they did conquer America, they did so swiftly and thoroughly.
Yes, they
With or Without You went to number one, and I still haven't found what I'm looking for, followed to the top spot.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this was a number one hit. Edge used a distortion device called an infinite guitar to create the wail.
Oh, okay.
It was invented by Michael Brook, whom the Edge worked with on the soundtrack in 1986 film called The Captive. Brook created the infinite guitar by replacing the pickup on a regular guitar with a magnetic device that vibrates the string. So like maybe like an Ebow kind of thing. The title is more sincere variation of I can't live without them, and I can't live without them idiom, which is typically used to describe something or someone that is frustrating but hard to give up. The video directed by Merritt Avis is rather artsy, showing the band performing the song in a rather affected manner. Mm-hmm. Did very well on MTV, where it was nominated for 7 Video Music Awards, including Video of the Year. It won Viewer's Choice, beating Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer.
Wow, that's something.
Sledgehammer is a really breakout video, too. That's like a really cool video. I mean, that's really awesome. So that says a lot about this song.
Exactly.
Bono intended this as a part of a trilogy with 2 other songs that did not make the album.
Interesting.
At the time, Bono didn't think it made any sense without the other 2 songs, but listeners were happy to fill the gaps in with their own interpretation. Bono, who had been married to Alison Stewart for 5 years by the time The Joshua Tree was released, described the lyric as pure torment. While on tour in French Riviera, he wondered if domesticity stand in the way of being an artist. I was at least two people, the person who is responsible, productive, and loyal, and the vagrant and the idler in me who just wants to run from responsibility.
Sure.
I thought these tensions were going to destroy me, but actually, in truth, it is me. That tension, turns out, is what makes me as an artist.
Yes.
I heard something. I heard something different about this song.
Okay.
I heard that they were arguing. Maybe I'm thinking of a different song. That there was tension in the band, and that's what the song was about. I don't know. Maybe I can have that mixed up with a different song. Let's move on.
Could be
Bullet the Blue Sky.
Yeah.
Which is which is the same riff as Stranglehold by Ted Nugent.
Yeah.
The lyrics were inspired by Bono's trip to Central America in 1985 with Amnesty International. He visited El Salvador. We stayed with a group of gorillas. G-U-E.
Yeah, not gorillas.
No. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
That would be absolutely fucking hilarious. There's Bono with the gorillas. He's like, what was her name? Sigourney Weaver played her in a movie.
Oh, Jane?
Jane Seymour. No.
No, Jane.
Jane of the Jungle.
That was her name.
I know Diane Fossey was also a gorilla expert, but that wasn't about her.
Yeah.
Gorillas in the Mist was about Jane of the Jungle.
Yeah, Jane of the Jungle.
That was her real
name. You can take that to the bank because we know what we're talking about. Yeah, maybe not. Anyway, back to Bono's trip to Central America with the gorillas.
With the gorillas.
Gorillas. Remember them?
Yeah. he got the idea for the song Mothers of the Disappeared, also came out of that trip. Adam Clayton, Larry Mullen, and The Edge came up with the music, and Bono wrote the lyrics around the track. For the guitar solo, Bono did his best to convey the feelings to The Edge. When I explained to Edge what I had been through in El Salvador, he was able to, with a nod to Jimi Hendrix, try and put some of that fear and loathing into his guitar solo. Okay. We strapped my feelings into the song Bullet the Blue Sky.
Okay.
A political song that condemns U.S. foreign policy for promoting unrest in Central America. Bono wanted to draw attention to the damage the U.S. was doing in other countries, which he felt most Americans did not know to the extent of. Criticism of America did not hurt record sales there. The Joshua Tree was still number one album the first week it's released. Yeah. I remember going to see the film version of Rattle and Hum.
Uh-huh.
And he had a Bono had an association with evangelical Christianity.
Yeah.
And when they did this in the film, he starts talking about the revolution and he goes, fuck the revolution. And there was some people in the movie theater that I went with that were very like,
he said the F word.
It's
Irish. Of course he's going to say the F word.
Well, not only that, but Irish, one of the things that people don't understand about Ireland, and Mr. Pittsburgh, I'm sure you know this, is like Ireland was racked for decades over revolutions between the Catholics and the Protestants.
Right.
And like literal, like they were like bombing each other over there.
Yeah,
troubles.
That.
Yeah.
As they were called. Yeah.
And, it was a really, so that's when he says, fuck the revolution. He's like, yeah, that's great. That's great. You want to have a revolution or whatever. But like the people get caught in the fucking crossfire.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, people just want to live their lives. They don't want to put up, they don't care about none of that nonsense.
They just want to live.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. He would sometimes call the president out from the stage.
That's, of course.
Oh my God. In the line, in the locust wind comes a rattle and hum, provided the title for the next album.
Mm-hmm.
In the section where Bono sings about a man face red like a rose in a thorn bush, he had someone specific in mind.
Oh, did he?
At this Rock Hall exhibit, Bono said he's peeing off those dollar... He's peeling off those dollar bills, right. Slapping her down.
100, paying, 200.
Right.
Yep.
In his head, it was Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
The last line about a man who's afraid to leave his house was almost changed to because outside world from because outside outside is America.
Okay.
They were not sure they wanted to say the U.S. directly, but they said it.
Yeah.
The B-side was In God's Country. Okay. Which is funny because it's a kind of In God's Country, right, is a much like more a kind flip, of uplifting, yeah, kind of song. So there you have it: Bullet to Blue Sky or Stranglehold.
Either or will do.
I remember hearing that; I couldn't believe what a heavy rock song U2 had done. It was like that was like the heaviest, yeah, rock and, yeah, roll kind of thing they'd ever, yeah, done.
Our next song
is Running to Stand Still. This is a very pretty song.
Uh-huh.
It's about heroin addiction. There's really not much to say about it because for a lot of people there's no physical doors open anymore. And if you can't change the world you're living in, seen through different eyes is the only alternative. And heroin gives you heroin eyes to see the world with. So in other words, I can't fix anything, so I'm, yep, going to do heroin. And the way it's how heroin's been described to me is like it makes everything seem nice.
Huh. I wouldn't know. And I don't want to know. But God bless the people that think that's the answer.
The line about Seven Towers refers to a housing project in Dublin where many drug users lived. U2 has remained mostly drug-free. But
mostly,
they know many people who became addicts.
Yeah.
A friend of theirs, Phil Leno from Thin Lizzy, died, yeah, of heroin abuse in 1986. Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side was a big influence on the song. Yeah, okay. If you say so.
Okay. Next up.
Next side, we're going to go. Now we're going to flip the record over to side two.
Okay.
This is my favorite side of the album. The first side. I remember buying this record, uh-huh, and I listened to it every day. When did I listen to it? I could have been my senior because I graduated in 1985. But I remember when it came out, I listened to it pretty much every day for like,
okay,
a year straight.
Yeah.
And I loved the first side. Those were the hits. But the second side really blew, right, me away. Second side opens with Red Hill Mining Town. This is about the United Kingdom miners' strike of 1984. I had no clue.
Yeah.
It didn't seem political to me at all.
Right.
I was interested in the miners' strike politically, but I wanted to write about it on a more personal level. A cold statistic about the pit closure and redundancies that follow is a drastic enough on one level, but it never tells the full human story. I wanted to follow the miner home and write about the situation of the song, the untold story of the coal strike. The song was going to be the second single of Joshua Tree, but decided not to perform this on tour and could not promote it effectively.
Hmm.
Huh.
Interesting.
Huh. It was dropped from the set list, and when they discovered during the rehearsals that Bono could not hit the high notes consistently.
Oh, well.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
I had no idea that it was about mining. I mean, yeah, like, you know, about like, it's like some, there was some kind of socio-political song. I thought it was just a beautiful song. The video was shot with film director Neil Jordan from Interview with the Vampire.
Okay.
Interesting. In God's Country. I love this song. I love the guitar work on this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the songs, Joshua Tree, that explores American culture and politics. Bono's lyrics were inspired by the Statue of Liberty in New York City.
Sure.
He was concerned that the American dream was being threatened by shady politics.
Ooh.
Really?
You think?
We must fast forward a few years, Bono.
Yeah, yeah.
1987 radio interview, Bono explained he was also addressing Americans' tendency to align themselves with old political ideologies instead of coming up with new ideas. I thought, put off the old, put on the new. Where are the new dreams? Where are the new dreamers? We need new dreams tonight. I wonder where they are. I want to see them. Mm. That's cool, dude, but you're not an American.
Yeah.
Okay, what was this about the... It's recorded in the basement of the Edge's YouTube... Of the Edge's house. He has a studio.
Oh, interesting.
Basement.
Yeah.
he said it wasn't a very, Lenoir said it was not a very inspiring place. It's kind of muggy little room where everything sounds dead. It worked because the spontaneity and the lack of pressure at the time of recording. Now you could say, you can't record down here. We need a proper room for drums. We need this and that and this sort of mic. But you could spend 3 days working out a foolproof plan and still not get a great performance. So sometimes just the down and dirty. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this, that's how the song came about. Good
there
stuff.
You go.
Trip Through Your Wires, I think, is a really fun song. Please don't let it be about politics, because in my mind, it's not a song about politics. Song the song is about a girl who evokes tremendous passion in a guy.
Right, yeah, okay. Thank God.
Thank God. Because to me, that's what it meant, too. I thought this was like a kind of a chick song, a song about being in love, a song about meeting a girl and kind of being like really taken with her. The title is a play on tripwire, which is a low place wire that often sets off a trap. Bono sings about being caught up in her wires. U2 played this for the first time on RTE television show called TV Gaga.
TV Gaga, you say?
Not, is that related to Radio Gaga?
I think it is.
Promoted as a different U2 sound. They played a raw version with no processing. The producer of the show was a friend of the band. Bono played harmonica on this track, an instrument he first started playing when the band was just starting out and attempting to cover Neil Young's song Heart of Gold. Wow.
Oh, okay.
I wonder what they would sound like covering that. Do we want to know?
I do.
I mean, these were bands. These were guys that, like, one of the things people don't, I mean, I think people forget about U2 is they didn't play instruments.
Wait, what?
They didn't play instruments when they started. They didn't know how to play.
Oh, that's true.
They learned how to play. You know, Adam Clayton, I think, was the only guy, and they said they let him in the band because he used words like fret.
Oh, gee, he knew
some. One Tree Hill wrote this song about Greg Care. This is the gentleman that was in their organization that passed away. Was hired to as local help when the group came to New Zealand in 1984. He earned himself, he endeared himself with his personality and work ethic and was hired on full time. He was killed in Dublin on July 3rd, 1986, when he was hit by a car while running an errand for the band. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He was on Bono's motorcycle.
Oh,
that's
hell.
Terrible. That's horrible. That really sucks. So they wrote a song for him. One Tree Hill is the tallest of five volcanic islands in Auckland.
Auckland,
where Greg Carroll took Bono his first night in New Zealand. It's a tourist attraction. With a monument at the summit dedicated to John Logan Campbell, one of Auckland's founding fathers, Bono shared his memory of the experience in 2009 with the band Biography. So that's what that song is about. I did not know that. It's a really beautiful song.
Yes.
Exit. We're hitting the last two here. Exit and Mothers of the Disappeared. Lyrics invade dark impulses of a desperate man. The song is about a religious man who became a very dangerous man when he couldn't work out the mystery on the hands of love. So whatever that is.
The hands of love.
The Bono says he was inspired by Norman Mailer's The Executioner's Song and Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, both books about murderers. This was my attempt at writing a story in the mind of a killer. It is all very well to address America and the violence that is aggressive foreign policy, but to really understand that, you have to get under the skin of your own darkness, the violence we all contain within us. Violence is something I know quite a bit about. I have a side of me which in a corner can be violent. In the last, it's the least attractive thing in anyone, and I wanted to own up to that. Bono slipped on stage and dislocated his shoulder while performing the song at RFK Stadium in 1987.
Oh my.
Robert John Bardo, a stalker who murdered the 21-year-old American actress Rebecca Schaefer in 1989, claimed the song compelled him to kill her.
Really?
So it's not just Judas Priest and AC/DC guys that are caused just rock music.
Exactly.
Horrible. Different subject matter. So, see, the second side of the album, they're kind of moving around a little bit. Mm-hmm. The first side of the album sort of has this thing, and the second side they kind of open up and explore some different things, and then finally, Mothers of the Disappeared, which is a cool song too. Again, I think we're back to the sort of political thing,
right?
As he explains, when interesting song in concert, Bono wrote this when he made his trip to El Salvador. He met the comrades. What were they?
Comrades.
Comrades. Jeez, I can't read it.
Good thing I'm here to help you out.
Is that how you spell it? Comrades?
No, that's Commodores.
Commodores. Don't call, why you call
he met the Commodores.
He met the Commodores. That doesn't say comrades. What are you talking about?
I just looked up real quick and saw a couple of letters, and I'm like, hey, see, comrades.
Now, welcome to my world.
Yes.
Oh. These women, the mothers of the disappeared were these women who had lost their children to death squads, leaving the mothers unsure if their children were alive or dead.
Wow.
Stayed with a bunch of guerrillas, as we mentioned earlier, in the middle of the mountains in North Country, where he was inspired to write Buildable Sky, blah, 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 blah. Oh, wow. The song ties in with U2's work with Amnesty International. They did this in 1998 in Buenos Aires. And when they performed the song on stage, they showed pictures of missing children.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Like, as much as I love U2, like, I don't know what I mean? Like, that's too heavy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not into
come here
that.
And get depressed.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
came here to enjoy life.
I think, like, after going through this album, I actually like it a little bit less.
Really?
Yeah.
You know the backstory.
Yeah, like the album sounded way more, to my ears, sounded way more upbeat and way more positive.
Well, that's the way the Irish are. There's a lot of happiness and joy until you find out.
Really, is that how you guys are?
That's exactly how we are.
Guys are fucked.
Yeah, we are, pretty much.
Just as an aside, I was just desperate for something. It really didn't come up with the podcast until today. I thought, I don't know what albums have been released in the month of March.
Ah.
And this was almost our podcast.
Right.
Van Halen too.
Ooh.
But we just did Van Halen not long ago.
Yeah, so sorry.
So we can come back to Van Halen another time. But Van Halen was released in March of 1979.
Oh, interesting.
No politics on that record.
There are not.
Master of Puppets by Metallica was released in March in 1986.
Very good.
Young Americans was released in March of 1975. Yeah. Surfer Rosa by the Pixies was released in 1988. Sure. March.
Sure.
Oh, goodness.
I like
gracious.
That album cover.
Right here. Tiny Music Songs from the Vatican Gift Shop by the Stone Temple Pilots was released in March of 1996. I like this record.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a cool record. They really changed their sound on this record. It does not sound like any of their other records. I think it's more like kind of Beatlesque.
Okay.
It's an interesting record. If you haven't heard it in a while, go back and listen. Super Unknown by Soundgarden was released on March 8th of 1994. So that's another March album, Black Hole Sun, songs like that.
Yes.
Adrenalized by Def Leppard was released in March of
92. Yes.
Sad Wings of Destiny by Judas Priest was released on March 23rd, 1976.
Judas Priest.
Foreigner. The debut album by Foreigner was released March 8th of 1977. We've not really done anything on Foreigner.
No,
we should do something on Foreigner.
We should.
Glass Houses by Billy Joel was released in March 1980.
Sure.
Southern Accents by Tom Petty. It's a great record.
Yes.
Released in 1985 in March.
Yes.
Overkill by Motorhead was released in 1979 on March 1979. Of course, the Joshua Tree, which we just talked about.
Sure. Oh.
Aerosmith, Same Old Song and Dance was released in March 1st, 1974.
It's uncanny.
Uncannily.
It is uncannily.
So there that was just go. So we might revisit some of those. I think we should do podcasts.
Foreigner,
on.
Like,
yeah, we haven't said anything about Foreigner.
We haven't said anything about Foreigner.
Foreigner is a kind of like one of those like redheaded stepchildren of rock and roll.
Yeah.
They don't get the love and respect.
Exactly.
Let's talk about some new music.
Yeah, let's do
it. Let's listen to Kelsey Carter, not Kelsey Grammer.
Kelsey Carter with K's.
With a K. We can mute that. Check this out. Kelsey Carter and the Heroines, Love Goes On.
Made a fool out of me. I took the lesson.
info on the
so
band?
Kelsey Carter, all with K's, Kelsey Carter, and the Heroines is a four-piece Australian/British rock and roll band whose debut album, Missing Person, was a critically acclaimed and a thrilling introduction to a truly singular musical mind. So this the song we're listening to here was released 5 months ago. They do have more recent stuff. I just really like this song. I thought I'd share it. They are currently out on tour. Not coming to Pittsburgh. Sorry. Not coming to Pittsburgh. But yeah, really cool little find they made.
Really cool. Reminds me of some of the, like, they don't sound like Katrina and the Waves, obviously, but just something about it has that kind of same sense of melody or something in the chorus.
Thanks, Kelsey.
It's cool. Good schnitt.
You're a nice girl. I can tell by the way you sing. What do you got?
Well, yes. Nothing good.
Nothing good. Well, I know.
Just a giant bag of suck.
Oh.
Just a giant bag of suck.
At least that's a giant bag.
This is Dace Rocks or Day Rocks.
Dace Rocks.
Dace Rocks.
Dace Rocks.
There's a little ostinato on the guitar.
Ostinato, you say?
Fancy schmancy video effects.
Look at that. He's playing an acoustic guitar.
Sound like the Who.
It's what?
I think they sound like the Who.
Oh, right. Yep.
I think they're kind of cool.
Very cool.
Kind of
all
cool
right,
band.
Good pick.
There is a bio. Now, of course, the bio is not on their site. I'm like, can you put the bio? No.
No.
Deathrocks.com for like that's where you get all the tour information and all kind of shit like that. But Daniel Rocca, also known as Des Rocks, as he pronounced it, is an American rock musician from Rockville Center.
Oh, well, there you go.
New York. Wow. Des Rocks is a solo project produced and led by Daniel Rocca. When touring, Rocca was joined by his longtime friends and bandmates, William Tully and Eric Mendelssohn.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Des Rocks has toured with rock bands such as Muse, the Rolling Stones,
Struts. Oh, the Struts, sure.
Influences include Muse, Elvis Presley, Jimi Hendrix, Roy Orbison, Kanye West, Queen. Though Rocca's focus is individuality and sounding unlike other rock artists. I don't know. I hear the Who. I mean, yeah, I guess there's some Queen in there.
I don't dislike it at all. I think it's really good.
It's good stuff. Called The Never Ending Moment. A funny thing about how like I came
funny across, haha like it entertains you boy, it makes I'm you telling, laugh
what am I like a fucking like clown
Yes.
Was when I discovered, and some of these bands, this is how I found them, some of the bands I found on TikTok.
Sure.
But some have been because I listened to new music on YouTube for the show.
Yes.
And then after the show, I'll be like chilling out.
Yep.
And some band will show up. And that's how I came across Des Rock. Oh, like, cool. After one of our shows, I was chilling out. And I'm like, fuck, these guys are great. And I got to save them. So we have a new and notable playlist on YouTube.
YouTube,
so just go to that if you want to hear them. And make sure I added Kelsey to that. Because that way you can, if you like the music that you hear when we do these, like, please go and listen to these bands and, you know, and give them some spins, let them add it to your playlist and everything. This is how these guys get like a little notoriety is if you start adding like Kelsey Carter and the Heroines, Love Goes On. That's a great song. It's literally got 373 likes.
Oh, we need
it. It needs like 3 million likes. It's a good song.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a fucking killer song. That should have tons of likes. It has they have 42,000 subscribers. The song has had 10,000 views since October 6th. It needs 10 million.
Yes.
Yes, it does. Des Rocks.
Sure.
What's his? 2.6 million subscribers. So Des is doing a little bit better.
Okay, there you go.
4.3 thousand likes on it. Yeah. Also, like, it doesn't hurt anything to subscribe to their channel. What I do is I can't stand notifications, so I don't turn on notifications.
Exactly.
But I do subscribe to the channel if I like the band because I'm like, you know, it throws them a little bone.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is the more how it works, guys, is the more subscribers, the more likes, stuff that they get, the more the algorithm will show it to more people.
Exactly. So yeah, check them out.
I mean, these guys all deserve to be at least heard.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure.
What was the last... somebody posted this on Facebook today. What was the last CD you bought?
Oh, wow, man. I can't even remember. Isn't that horrible?
Bill Damiano says, look up Burn the Jukebox and play one of their originals.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Pittsburgh. Well, no, I'll look this up. What was your last CD you bought?
I can't even remember. That's because I'm the kind of guy that if I like an artist, even though you can stream their music, I will go buy the CD. And I can't remember the last CD I've bought. Wow, isn't that horrible? Like, if I was in front of my CD collection, I'd be like, oh, there it is. That's the one I got. But I can't think off the top of my head.
Okay, Bill Damiano is you can dial in on the request line tonight. Hey, it's open. Bill Damiano is requesting "Burn the Jukebox."
All right,
let's see if we can find a "Burn the Jukebox" song for you.
All right, here we go. Yes. We're excited now.
Okay. He says play one of their original songs. These all look like cover songs. Is that a covers? It says Burn the Jukebox cover.
I'm so far away, I can't see this one. That's a cover.
Trying to find an original, Mr. Bill.
Yes, Mr. Bill.
What?
Not Bwahaha. They don't have a song called
Bwahaha.
Hold on. Oh,
what,
I see.
Do they have any? Name one of their originals, because these all look like covers.
Because otherwise we'll be forced to play one of my originals, and you don't want that. Caves, maybe?
This is called Caves.
Oh.
By Burn the Jukebox on the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
This is a pretty good video for, like, just high school kids. Did he say high school kids?
Oh, nice. Les Paul.
He's got Les Paul. I like him already.
I can't see the light of
day. We're playing Caves, Bill.
I'm still stuck in this cave, and I'm feeling like I'm out of touch, out of sight, out of mind, but I see the cracks in those walls. Hearing the sound of the wind and the dust, the water dripping on my head. I don't know why the stuff in my life is daunting me. see my whole life in front of me. I can feel the roughness of the caves, and I can't seem to find a way out. I can feel the heat of the battle, and there is no one to hear me shout. Rocking out with someone who there's always friends to help you, that will never ever make you feel blue again, blue again, blue again. Crystals line in the walls of the cave that we are trapped in every day, but they sparkle through it all.
For a bunch of kids, it's like not bad.
Bill, are these guys local? Are they in the Pittsburgh area?
Are these local guys?
I found them on Facebook. They are pretty tight. They're not bad.
Bill says try Turbulence.
Okay.
Let's see if we can find Turbulence. This is a kind of a cool jam. Let's try Turbulence.
We're going to try Turbulence here.
They got 41. Yeah, okay. Looks live.
Thousand of you, I think now on Spotify. That is crazy. So thank you guys so much.
It's kind of hard to tell, but it's got a very 90s rock.
Yeah, very cool.
It's this kind of music that like I would have heard like in the basement of a frat house.
Exactly.
You know what
they
I mean?
They are tight. Bill's right. They are tight.
They're pretty
really
tight
good.
Band. Pretty good band.
Oh, they're Wilkesboro. Hey, they're Pennsylvanians.
We're in Wilkes-Barre.
That's all right with us. Wilkes-Barre, that's all right.
Speaking of Wilkes-Barre, go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com. check out all your Ludini needs. That's where you get all the back episodes, just where you can find out about live broadcasts like this. I want to give a shout out to Bill and Jody for hanging out with us tonight.
Grazie, grazie.
I just kind of wonder if by putting, well, first of all, I got the event up late. I'm still working this out, guys. So that's part of the problem. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, I just got a Bono gets a lot of hate. You
what?
Two kind of right now gets they get like kind of.
Do you know
a lot
the difference
right
between
now.
God and Bono?
What?
God doesn't walk around Dublin thinking he's Bono.
Yeah, there you are.
There you go. Thank there you, gentlemen.
That's like the joke, right?
Right.
Where the guy goes to heaven, and you know he's a guitar player,
right?
And they give him, you know, he's like he says there's like a practice room, and every practice room has like you know your whatever fantasy guitar you already had in a Marshall stack, and you can just go and just start jamming, and it's like awesome. And this guy goes to the practice rooms, and he hears this guy playing next to him, and he goes, "Oh my God, it's Yngwie!" And so he goes back to St. Peter, and he says, "Is Yngwie here?" He goes, "No, he's still alive. He's not here." He says. Oh. I swear to God, Yngwie's. I swear that Yngwie's here. He goes, "Oh no! That's God. That's not Yngwie. That's just God. He thinks he's Yngwie."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Right.
Oh,
that's the same thing.
Right,
it's
you are, sir.
It's a different version, same joke.
Yes.
But yeah, no, and I just kind of wonder, like, I you know, if they are just you know, there's a little bit of with Bono. People are like Bonoed out.
Just to you know,
who said that? Who said who said, are you going to talk about them putting the, how they made everybody listen to their album on
my daughter.
Right.
When I mentioned what we were doing tonight, she goes, yeah, make sure you mention how they put their album on everybody's iPhone. I responded in quotations in an Irish accent, but everyone loves our music. No. No, not everybody does, Gina. Hi, mates.
Okay, when I first heard that, okay, that they had done that,
yeah,
I thought I didn't realize the problems that it caused.
Yes.
I didn't realize it caused problems. I just assumed right. like it was just like there in the background if you could listen to it if you didn't no. want to. But apparently it was like clogging
it took
up.
Yeah, it took a memory that people didn't have, maybe.
Yeah, it was like clogging up the phone and making things not work right and everything, and it was pissing people off. So, yeah, that really backfired on them.
It looked good on paper.
You know what I mean? But I mean, if you figured, how do you get your music? I mean, how would you get your music out to people? You know what I mean? If it comes on the iPhone.
Yeah. It didn't even come on the iPhone. They just sent it out to people who already had iPhones. And it,
I thought that was the deal. You bought the iPhone. And
no,
you left the new,
no.
I'm pretty sure, you, dude. No, when you bought the new U2 album, when you bought the new iPhone, it came with the
no,
record.
No, because I had an iPhone at the time, and one morning I woke up and the album was there.
Right, but I'm saying when you bought the phone, though, if you didn't have a phone when you bought the phone,
right.
it came with it.
But if you already had an
right,
iPhone.
Right, well, that part I didn't know about, but I'm saying I do know that it came with
yeah.
the phone. It came
yeah.
with the phone. I no, didn't no. realize
you
that
had
it caused
one for
any
a
kind
year,
of problem.
You woke up one morning and U2's new album is
okay.
on.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's fine if it doesn't do if it doesn't interfere with the phone. But when it
but
interferes
it did.
With the phone,
it did,
then
yeah.
then now you've what you've done is you've giant like whoops.
Oopsie-daisy. Yeah. That's okay.
I remember seeing them interviewed and it might have been on that terrible show, The View, but they said Bono got interviewed, and the first question out of somebody's mouth was, "Hey, Bono, how did I get your album off of my phone?" My phone's all fucked.
Yeah, because it was really hard to get it off.
You couldn't get it off.
You couldn't delete
yeah.
it.
Yeah. you couldn't delete it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like I said, like if you're going to do something like that, like I get the idea of it, but you can't have it fuck up the functionality of the product.
Exactly.
Like, that doesn't, that's terrible. So, but anyways, go to LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com to find out about more stuff that we have going on, back podcasts, all kinds of stuff. We'll have Lily next week. We're going to have a good
Yay!
Time. Bill Damiano, Jody for Lizzie, thank you guys for hanging
thank
out with
guys.
Us tonight. Don't forget to check out Rock Rage Radio. Download the free app. Don't forget to listen to Hot Licks with Lily Six
yes.
as well on Rock Rage Radio. It's a great show. And Mr. Pittsburgh, anything else you would like to share?
Well, I don't know, Lou. We're going to see how next Tuesday, the great Ludini is going to inspect my car for me. And depending upon what, I do know it's probably going to need some things, but depending upon what it needs, I may be talking about my new guitar next week.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Yes, Lord Jesus. All right. All but anyway, we'll see how that goes.
Well, you guys have a good one.
Keep me in your prayers.
We need to start a prayer circle for Mr. Pittsburgh's guitars.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys have a great week. We'll catch you all on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.
See ya.